Good evening. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, a monthly radio show that explores issues of the heart as well as of the mind. If you have ever traveled in China and visited a public park early in the morning, like I have, what you see are numerous groups of people moving in harmony. Some of the groups look like they are dancing. So on closer inspection, I saw that they indeed were moving gracefully and in sync with one another. Many of the people were elderly, and there was an instructor at the fore modeling the movements. They were practicing Tai Chi, a practice that's growing in popularity here in the U.S. and here in Juneau. Many Juneauites know well the benefits of regular Tai Chi practice. And with me in the studio tonight is Glenn Ray, a Juneau Tai Chi teacher. Welcome, Glenn.
Thank you.
Good. Hey, first thing I want to ask you, because I know you've lived, how long have you lived in Juneau?
Over a 40-year period.
So long.
So there was about 6 years, though, in Anchorage.
Okay.
And 1 year in Heidelberg.
Okay. So this far away from the mainland and mm-hmm. and where the American Tai Chi movement would be happening, how in the world did you become involved in Tai Chi or interested in Tai Chi?
Well, it began really at the end of my formal meditation practice when I was interested in exploring other ways of working with mind. And there was a Tai Chi class offered within about a year and a half after I had ended formal practice. And by Joe Bomey and Barbara Greening. And so I took a class from them, actually Barb Greening, and it just was something I very strongly resonated with and just haven't stopped since then. That was over a 10-year period, about 10 years ago.
Now, you're mentioning something that some folks may not understand. You said after the end of your formal meditation practice,
yeah.
Could you explain what that means?
Well, I studied with a Soto Zen priest named Yvonne Rand for approximately 20 years. And there's a tradition of having different teachers at different stages of meditation practice. And the first person that you resonate with and work with is often called the root teacher. And that is that can take 20 years or 100 years to go through this process of grounding and really coming home to oneself. So then there's a natural inclination to go out and study different ways, different teachers, and that's what I did.
And so it just so happened soon after you had stopped the formal meditation practice, and you had stopped for a reason, or...
I just wanted to felt a strong inclination to study with other teachers, and in particular studying with somebody in the Theravadin tradition, and it was pretty natural. It just segued into another thing,
mm-hmm.
and I was interested in what interested me in Tai Chi. And then after a while, after about 5 years, then Qigong as well. Was the meditative quality that I could find in those slow, continuous movements.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not exactly, that certainly isn't meditation, but there's a meditative quality in it that I have to use the word resonate because logically, I don't know how to explain it. It's just something I felt very strongly
sure.
interested in and drawn to.
And are those two teachers still in Juneau?
One person has passed. The other person is in Juneau, but that person that's in Juneau is no longer teaching.
Okay. What kind of training outside of taking classes with these two individuals, what kind of training have you done?
I quickly then went to the weekly work or the yearly workshop, which was a 7-day affair in the second week of June, that is led by a person named Dr. Paul Lam. And he has a worldwide network of teachers that teach what Harvard Medical School calls short sets. Tai Chi, the shortest of the long sets would be 24 movements, and that would be goes by the name of Yong 24. So a short set would be a set of 12 movements or 24 movements or something like that, and for specific purposes. My initial interest and training in Tai Chi with Barb Greening was with Tai Chi for arthritis. And I initially went to study with Paul Lam to deepen my practice with Tai Chi for arthritis, and that led me to larger, longer forms and a variety of short sets, not just a Tai Chi for arthritis.
So Tai Chi for arthritis, why did you pick that focus?
It was available.
Okay. It was available.
And I didn't have any, it was available. And at that time, I didn't have a very wide view. So,
yeah.
And this is Juno. And so that was available. And so I just, was drawn to it.
But you went down south for the training. So
I,
you could
well,
have gone anywhere, right?
No, well, anywhere that there's a master teacher that teaches it, one of the people that train with Dr. Paul Lam on a long-term basis, mostly medical people that he picked early on or martial artists that he picked early on in starting the, it's called Tai Chi for Health Institute. He lives in Sydney, Australia, and he began developing this organization in about the mid 1990s.
By any chance, were you starting to have symptoms of arthritis?
No. What I connected with was a dance-like quality. You said that it appeared to be a dance.
It was beautiful.
So it's a and Tai Chi to some extent could be explained as a choreographed set of Qigong movements. And one of the elements, although it's quite distant element, is a shamanic dance. So that comes through this other exercise piece called Qigong, and that was one of the building blocks of Tai Chi. So let me stop there before I get
too wound
that's
up. Exactly where I want to go, which is the history of Tai Chi. So because many of our listeners, including your interrogator here, may not understand exactly what Qigong is and where all this comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start at the beginning. Where did this all originate and when,
well,
do you think?
Where do things originate? That's, philosophically, we just don't know. But Tai Chi is thought to have originated in the early 1600s in Chen Village, and the first form was put together by a retired general known as Mr. Chen. And but there's another theory that Tai Chi started in the 12th century. However, that there's no proof about the 12th century beginning, but everything seems to point back to early 1600s in Chen Village. And Mr. Chen was a retired general who had a reputation for resisting the attacks by Japanese pirates in South China Sea. And he developed a strategy by fading back and allowing the enemy to come in and then attacking as the energy of the enemy kind of dissipated, then the general would come in with his troops. And so that was incorporated early on in the Tai Chi into a defense, a martial art defense that became known as Tai Chi. Then
it was a martial art.
Yeah, at first it was martial art. That's something you might ask me about, the reasons why anybody would want to study this. And then a second form was developed in the early 1700s by Mr. Chang, followed by Mr. Ho, Mr. Wu, and in the early 1900s by Mr. Sun. So there are five schools of Tai Chi, and within each one of those schools, there's a tremendous amount of variation. So when person studies, whether it be Yang or Sun, you really study the teacher as well as the particular form. You study the teacher's understanding of that form.
You mean, when you say you study the teacher, you study the teacher's philosophy or their life history?
No. The teacher...
Oh, I hear.
Might have a bad hip. So the teacher adapts that style of Tai Chi to his or her ability. Mostly it was his ability up until the early 1900s of doing Tai Chi. And so that person might leave out some movements and add some movements because of their body. A Tai Chi teacher at an earlier age would teach differently than that person would teach at an older age because the person has more experience. So you really learn that teacher as well as the form, or that teacher's expression of the form.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is an interesting subject. I've had more than one person, actually a small group of people, get quite mad at me because I wasn't teaching the form as they knew it on a DVD. At that time, I had 6 or 7 years more experience in a DVD, and they were locked into thinking that Tai Chi is a...
monolithic.
One size fits all, but it's not. It's highly diverse, and the more you study it, the more nuanced it becomes as a person turns, and this is the link with meditation, as a person turns their attention to the internal movements of the body, that becomes very interesting, and that lends itself to developing and using qualities of what in meditation is called one-pointed attention. So let me stop there. I'm getting off.
No problem with going into your deep knowledge. You've obviously mm-hmm. read a whole lot about Tai Chi. Are you still going down mm-hmm. yearly for training, or do you feel that's
no longer done? Studying in Dr. Lam's school. I'm studying with a teacher named Hong Yang that lives in Southern California. I met her at one of Dr. Lam's week-long workshops, but she's a person probably about 64 now, but she started studying martial arts and Tai Chi at the age of 5, and she's also got a classical Chinese education on a university level, and so she's very, very, very grounded in the background of Tai Chi and in the Tai Chi practice, and she's also been a boxer and a international competitor in Tai Chi movements, sword form, and things like that. So I've kind of moved my study to a person that I consider that can offer me more, that I resonate more strongly with.
So there's a sword form of Tai Chi?
Oh, yeah, sword and fan. So sometimes when you go to a park, you might see people with aluminum swords.
I did.
Flashing
I did.
Around and or fans.
I saw swords.
Or with scarves.
Yeah.
And so those are legitimate forms of Tai Chi.
What do the words Tai Chi mean?
There's two avenues there of meaning. One avenue will lead you into philosophy, and that's when we say here in this country, Tai Chi, we're really using the Chinese word for the philosophical concept. Tai Chi is the still point within a universe of movement. So it's symbolized by the North Star. So if you roll your sleeping bag out on the beach, and stare at the northern star in the sky, you'll notice that the stars seem to move around it. But the North Star itself is stationary, is still. So philosophically, Tai Chi, and this links with the practice of Tai Chi, because this is one of the outcomes is possible, of finding that quiet place in a universe of movement. So there's another link with meditation.
Mm-hmm.
With some forms of meditation, not all forms of meditation lead you to that place.
Yeah.
The other one is known as Tai Chi Chuan.
Yes.
And that's what we do. Tai Chi Chuan is the nurturance of the supreme ultimate, and it refers to fighting, boxing. So what we actually do, the separation there, if a person was interested in a meditative quality and linking with the idea of Tai Chi, that would be one of the reasons for studying it, and that would fall into a category that I'd call spiritual or / psychological. I think spiritual is a problematic word, but certainly psychological could be more easily described. A second intention a person might have is to learn martial arts in order to defend themselves. And a third reason, and the most popular probably in the country, or certainly the popularity is growing, is for health reasons. And I think there's a fourth category, too. It's that people without intention who just come along and want to sample it and see what it is. And I think that's completely legitimate, that experimental idea, or that experimental attitude of what is this thing anyway.
Uh-huh. So the words Tai Chi don't have a specific, like, translation.
Well, Tai Chi Chuan does,
yeah,
and that means Tai Chi, in when it's used for a martial art, it means supreme ultimate.
Okay.
And Chuan, Q-U-A-N, means the nurturance or the growing of something. So it's the building of the supreme ultimate, and it relates to martial arts. Some people say it's the supreme ultimate fist, but there's no word there, fist. That's something else. But it has to do with boxing. Tai Chi has to do with quiet place in the universe.
I love the example of lying and looking at the North Star. I think of many memoirs or stories I've read, true stories, about people having that experience of lying under a tree or lying down and looking at all the stars in the sky and having a supreme ultimate experience.
Yeah, well, so that would mean they would lay there on the beach, get up, and then punch somebody. But moving those two things together. But so that's possible. I have a wonderful picture done by Carrie Howard that I'm not sure if she took it here in Juneau or in Wyoming or Colorado or something like that, but I use that on my business card.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
What lovely. This is broad, and you've already started talking about it, but let's talk about the philosophy of Tai Chi or Tai Chi Chuan. How would you?
Well, so there is something. I'm not really so knowledgeable about that. The when martial artists talk about the philosophy of Tai Chi, they're really talking about the way they use energy to defend or to attack somebody. So that philosophy is very specific to boxing. So the philosophy of Tai Chi, the still point, is really, if you want to plumb the depth of that, you really have to go into the philosophy of Tao, and more particularly Yin and Yang, and or Yin and Yang. So that's like asking, what's the meaning of Zen?
I was going to do that next week.
Oh, that would be, let's see, somebody muddle that up.
What's the meaning of life?
What's the meaning of life? That's exactly right from a Soto Zen perspective.
Okay,
that's exactly
Glenn, Glenn, I'm not going to let you off the hook.
Okay.
We're going to be profound tonight. Tonight's
profound.
About profundity. But while we're meditating on the meaning of Tai Chi or Tai Chi Chuan, we're going to have some music. And my able engineer here, Jeff Brown, who's filling in tonight, has chosen some beautiful music. So let's
Chinese disco, I think.
Welcome back to our discussion about Tai Chi. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio this evening is Glenn Ray, a longtime Tai Chi instructor in Juneau. So, Glenn, I've given you a few minutes to think about philosophical things about Tai Chi, but let me ask you about Qi energy. I hear that term, Qi energy. What is that?
It's so variously defined by so many different people. It defies exactly description. Qi is a Chinese word that I like to think of as vital force. Oftentimes, it's referred to as energy. Mm-hmm. When the Europeans were trying to understand the various cultures that they had begun to control, one of which was China, and parts of China were being controlled by the French, and they kept coming across this word, qi, qi, qi. And so they're trying to understand, well, what exactly is it? 50 years previous to that, electricity was discovered. So someone offered the suggestion, well, it's kind of like electricity. It's an energy. Ah, they said, yes, an energy. So that word, although it entered into our collective understanding in a French form of energy, whatever that means, whatever that is, I don't know. Do you know what the French word for energy is?
Energy.
Oh, very nice. Okay. So so we have, for the last 150 years, referred to the word chi as energy, but it's not exactly energy, and I think that it's problematic for us as Americans to use the word energy, because we're so energy addicted that we want more of it. We're not only energy addicted, but materialistic. So we'd like to get a lot of energy and bank it somehow.
Right.
And so science keeps looking for qi as a material substance. But actually, it's more like a process. For example, I have seen two of my three children born, and in that first breath, how the first breath animates them. And I've also witnessed two friends as in their last breath of life, and how that last breath leaves them. They kind of sink into the bed, They're no longer animated by their breath.
Would you call it life force?
So I'm gonna go. People have taken different stabs at it, but I'm going with life force.
Oh, that's okay.
So where does chi come from? So here is this idea. But the earliest depiction of qi, the word qi, was of a rice pot with steam rising above it. So there's the process again, steam, there's something that causes this energy to rise. So that was a way of imagining qi. And that comes from quite a few thousand years ago. I'm not sure when the first depiction of that was. Let me lead that here.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got distracted there with something. Anyway.
Keep going, because I distracted you. Yeah.
Okay. So qi, where does qi come from? It has three major sources, one of which is the air we breathe. So the second major source, and these are not in priority order, is the food we eat. So, and the third major source, again, not in priority order, is our genetic inheritance. Mm. So it's not so different from a description that we might find on the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention of what are the essentials of life. Inheritance, the genes or DNA.
Yeah.
Having unpolluted air to breathe and having undefiled food to eat, and that those processes bring us, give us life. So those are the sources of qi. It's not really that's why we're hung up on looking at qi on a material basis as opposed to a process, a force that animates us in a way that we call life or being alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And another term is, yeah. Or terms.
No, I should say that the qi that I was just talking about is not the qi in Tai Chi.
Got it.
Okay. Chinese is a tonal language.
Mm-hmm.
So the same word qi could be said in four different ways. You're aware of tonal languages,
right?
When I try to impress my Tai Chi teacher by using a Chinese word, I often get what are you saying because I don't do it in the right tone.
Yeah, it's hard.
So yeah.
some other terms that Westerners are familiar with that may come from this philosophy. Mm-hmm. Yin-yang. Could you tell us a little about yin-yang?
Yeah. So this is out of Taoist philosophy, and it refers to the forces in our life. So so this in Taoist philosophy, not unlike our scientific philosophy of the creation of the world, or of Native Americans' idea about the creation of the world, or many cultures, there was a moment of great darkness, confusion, chaos. And then suddenly there was something very dramatic that happened. And that was the burst of energy that created the universe as we know it. So that's the foundation of the idea of Tao. Some great burst of energy that we're still living with today. And then so out of that burst of energy came yin and yang, the idea of these opposing forces. So one, so yang, and I'm mispronouncing yang. I should try to do a better job on that. But it's more pronounced as yang, Y-A-N-G. And so the yang force was denoted as a bright force, the sunny side of a mountain, upward lifting energy, and yin was the opposite. And so so everything in the world is composed of these, according to Taoist philosophy, of these different qualities. So one could say, well, water is yin, but within yin, there's a particular yang force of the current might be considered yang. Mm-hmm. So water isn't yin by itself, but what it does. For example, and also these were noted as masculine forces, the yang being a masculine force and the yin being a feminine force. And these are not male and female. They're words that denote a strong energy from a less of an energy. So masculine and femininity applies to yang and yin. And so anyway, I think that's about as far as I can go, because I'm already way out on a limb.
Okay.
This is like a huge subject in China, and it's the foundation for Chinese medicine, for traditional Chinese medicine, and that is so nuanced. And so yin and yang plays itself out in a very nuanced ways in terms of diagnosing problems and explaining bodily functions and suggesting on how a person might rebalance themselves and regain a degree of health. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge, huge subject, and that's as okay. far out in the limb as I want to go.
Okay, but I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Has it ever entered your mind that there is some similarity with the Tlingit sense of balance and reciprocity? Did that ever enter your mind? Nothing
no.
like that?
The person I study with, Ken Cohen, who I study Qigong with, I studied with him for about 4 years. He is a Native American doctor as well as a scholar in the area of Tai Chi and Qigong. He used to box.
Huh.
And boxing in Chinese is not Tai Chi, it's Wushu. And Tai Chi is just a method that you bring into the ring or the partner practice. So Ken has 40 years of experience, over 40, maybe 45 or so years of experience in Qigong, Tai Chi, Wushu, and Taoism. And he's been an apprentice for a Taoist priest for a number of years. But he is also a Native American doctor, and is considered an elder in the Cree Nation. So I'm going to leave that, as there is a certain kind of resonance between that he feels between Native American practices, outlooks, philosophies, and the philosophies and outlooks that have come in from China.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Yeah.
We've been talking about Qigong. So what's the relationship between Qigong and Tai Chi? I didn't quite understand,
yeah.
Rick. The difference, what each one,
yeah,
is.
Yeah, well, okay. Qigong is a word that is manufactured by the Chinese government in 1950. So it first appears in the literature around the 12th century, and at that time it was related to a breath practice or the nurturance of breath.
Hmm.
And remember what I said about that, the alliteration for qi early on in the Chinese language. So Qigong, the earliest depiction of a Qigong posture is from 3000 B.C. So whether in 3000 B.C. it was used exactly like Qigong practitioners today or not, we don't know, but the image was there. Later, 200 B.C., a piece of silk cloth was buried with somebody in China, dug up in, I think, around 1980 or so. And it depicted a lot of forms of Qigong that we call Qigong today. So the practice of Qigong is thought to go back to shamanic practices, which is far beyond the 3000 B.C. Depiction of that one, mm-hmm, particular stance. And so the Chinese government in 1950 were all hot to become Western, to gain some of the material benefits that the West had developed. And so they wanted to disassociate themselves from the what they considered a superstitious past, Taoism, and what was Qigong before it was called Qigong, it was called Dao Yin. And so they wanted to separate themselves from that because that had to do with this shamanic practices and also a mixture of Taoism. So they renamed it and rebranded it. And so Dao Yin, or Qigong as we call it today, is one of the three foundations for Tai Chi. So the other two, one would be Taoism, and the other would be boxing or wushu. And so out of the those experiences of the exercises and the nurturance of vital force and the need in those hundreds of years ago for people to be able to protect themselves and for psychological well-being, then Tai Chi emerged out of that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Why don't we take another? I love that music that Jeff chose. So let's take another short break. And then Glenn Ray and I, Dr. Elaine Schroeder, will be back to talk more about Tai Chi and specifically the research on its health benefits. Thanks, Jeff. Welcome back to our discussion about Tai Chi. And in a moment, I will be continuing my conversation with Glenn Ray, a Tai Chi teacher, experienced Tai Chi teacher in Juneau. And let's talk about some of the researched health benefits.
Before that, let me get you. It's kind of an in-joke.
Sure. Good.
Chai tea versus Tai Chi.
And did I say that?
Yeah,
I like got it mixed up,
no,
too. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Anyway, nice going. Yeah.
So there was a big Harvard study, and you told me about it, and I looked at it, mm-hmm. and there's been lots of research.
Lots
and lots in the West, yeah. By Western medical researchers. So what do they come up with?
Highly varied. If somebody is really interested, I always suggest to them to go to the sites of Centers for Disease Control and Prevention or the National Institutes for Health, and to go to their search function and do Tai Chi. And if you're interested in a particular disease, such as stroke, or diabetes, and Google those search those two things, you'll come up with a slew of research. The Harvard Medical School published a book August 2 years ago, and it's called the Harvard Medical School Tai Chi. It has three sections in it. The first section kind of defines what Tai Chi is. Second section surveys a number of studies, and their intent was to show what Western science has found to be true about the Tai Chi in terms of health outcomes, what seems to be true but not confirmed, and then what has not shown significant results. So the second section really addresses that, and to a greater extent, they are interested in the research pertaining to diabetes. And the third section is on a practical application of the exercise programs, and they're really focused on Qigong on that. And they suggest describe a number of exercises. So my background is in health promotion, but I'm not really paying a lot of attention to the health outcomes. That's not my particularly draw to Tai Chi. I'm more interested in the psychological aspects and the overlaps with meditation. But let me say that the research is very positive in improving balance, relieving pain and arthritis, for creating a sense of well-being, for managing certain symptoms of fibromyalgia. The research is positive in terms of enhanced circulation, strength building, mental focus, and if I haven't mentioned balance, then it's particularly positive in the area of creating a sense of a balance or a sense within the of balance within the practitioner.
What about blood pressure?
I don't think that it's as positive in other areas, but there is indication that Tai Chi, like other forms of exercise, reduces blood pressure.
Okay.
Can help. But mm-hmm. I think that's in the middle area there that the jury is still out. An indication, but it's not as strong as balance.
Yeah, when I read a summary, what I wasn't surprised about the flexibility, because I could see that.
Right.
And I wasn't surprised about the balance, given, you know, my image of some Tai Chi moves, and actually taking a few Tai Chi classes. What surprised me were two aspects. muscle strength.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it can improve both lower body strength and upper body strength. Although you're not, I'm going to quote from the study, although you aren't working with weights or resistance bands, the unsupported arm exercise involved in Tai Chi strengthens your upper body and your lower extremities as well, and core muscles in the back and abdomen. Mm-hmm,
absolutely.
Yeah, so that's super. And then the other thing that surprised me was a mention of aerobic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this may not be true with your form, but it said depending on the speed of the side and size of the movements, it can provide some aerobic benefits. And
I've read that too. I'm not sure. The principle in Tai Chi is slow and continuous.
Mm-hmm.
But as Ken Cohen said, that all of the Qigong movements can be adapted to a more aerobic form of exercise with speed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. In the summary I read, it may be in the same one, they didn't talk about the speed.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we think of neuroplasticity, which is the brain changes no matter how old you are, whatever you're doing, you could learn a new language at 80. You might be a little slow on it, but you'll learn a new language.
Not all of us.
Not all of us. You could learn a few words. You could learn a few words. You could certainly, learn an instrument later in life because it changes your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So with Tai Chi, it's continuous practice over and over again. And I would think it would really improve, and we'll start moving into the cognitive changes, it would really improve attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And which is very good as we age, and we either have age-related memory, confusion or loss, or even dementia. Just the over and over again of paying attention, because you've got to be paying. You have to be in the moment, right? When you're practicing Tai Chi,
you don't have to be. How can you be out of the moment? But anyway, no, you don't. That's it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The moment of the awareness of a moment comes and goes. So the idea of being in the moment is really, it's not accurate to say that. It's misleading. So in actuality, we come and go from the awareness of moments all throughout the day. So it's the same for Tai Chi. So you're training yourself or a person. It's not necessarily they're doing the training on purpose, but out of doing Tai Chi, in that they're gaining access to awareness of their place in time and space. And that's what we call, I think, being in the moment. But being in the moment it doesn't work. But it's completely part of our human experience every day throughout the day of our life.
And on a purely mundane basis, anytime we, especially as we're aging, we try difficult new experiences. That's why I mentioned learning a language, learning a musical instrument. I would say even square dancing. So if you're
absolutely,
I remember from I took Tai Chi a class in Seattle probably 40 years ago, and then just a class or two here in Juneau, and I remember being very challenged to concentrate and to focus. And
absolutely.
And I mean, it was like work.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy. And I thought, good, because if it's too easy, I mean, I can hike all I want, and as long as I don't fall on my face, it's pretty easy. I'm not doing anything particularly new. But these movements, it's like choreography, like you were saying, you're learning a dance, you're learning movements.
Well, this is a wonderful overlap with meditation, because we can only pay attention at one thing at a time. So when a person comes in to learn Tai Chi, they get hung up on thinking too much. Thinking is a mental sensation. Not only are the five the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch, that, but also from the meditation tradition. Mental sensation or thinking is the sixth sensation that we can become aware of. So that thinking gets in the way. So one, to learn Tai Chi, one has to ratchet down on the mental sensations and become more in tune with the physical sensations. So that becomes almost just like if a person walked into a meditation room for the first time and they came back for a second time, maybe, who knows, and they sat down, however the particular school likes to sit down, the first thing they know is the mind jumps around. And so here they are sitting, they've got the universe of other experiences to pay attention, but their access, their ordinary access, day-to-day access, they've been trained from birth, is to do a lot of thinking, be very busy in their mind. That becomes the first hurdle to learning Tai Chi or to learning meditation. And for everybody that stays, to some extent, they overcome that hurdle and go on to the next one.
I love that. So you mentioned the psychological impact. Mm-hmm. What would it be?
The research is in the area of sense of well-being.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure how that, you know, improves, you know, our ability to play music and stuff like that. But if we have a better sense of a better attitude, we're more likely to engage new activities. So maybe there's a link there. But the research is in the sense of feeling good about ourselves, no matter where we happen to be in the life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I just like to say, though, that we're a little bit hung up. This is a very materialistic culture, and we're a little bit hung up on the idea of getting health. And almost you have to give up that idea of getting health.
And getting what?
Getting health.
Health?
H-E-A-L-T-H.
Okay.
So health is an expected outcome of learning the process. A person has to kind of love doing this, and the other things fall out of that love of doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but people go in with the idea that they're going to get a certain outcome, and that's almost a guarantee that the outcome is not going to be achieved.
A conundrum.
You know that from meditation.
I know that.
Okay.
I know that. The harder you try,
the worse it gets.
The worse it gets, and the more distracted you are. Attachment. Mm-hmm. Attachment to outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so what you're saying is you just go into Tai Chi, whether you have arthritis. It's good for Parkinson's, apparently.
To some research in specific areas.
Yeah.
So,
to go into it.
But I've in all of the classes that I've done, especially through the falls prevention classes that are coordinated by Catholic Community Services, almost every class, people report to me rather significant outcomes in terms of balance, changing their relationship with fibromyalgia, with arthritis, a sense of well-being, happiness to be there. So I see that all the time. But we don't focus on that. What we do is focus on just the people that I do Tai Chi with. We talk about playing Tai Chi, not doing Tai Chi.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of an attitude of letting go right from the beginning with that attitude of playing Tai Chi.
So are there free classes for seniors?
There are, 60 and over. It's funded through a state health promotion grant, and the grant is administered by the Catholic Community Services. And if people want to take advantage of the class for 60 and over, it's completely free. It's an 8-week class, twice a week, to call Catholic Community Services and to register for the class.
And if you want to study with Glenn Ray, maybe he'll be teaching a course through community schools sometime.
Yeah.
So we need to wind up. This went quite fast. And I want to thank Glenn for sharing his thorough, very, very thorough knowledge about Tai Chi this evening. And also, I would like to very much thank Jeff Braun for coming in tonight to
thank you, Jeff.
Work the board. And good night to all our Southeast Alaska listeners. Please tune in on another Monday next month at 7 p.m. on K2 for our next edition of Mind Over Matter. Good evening, folks.